Samach Beis here. We're starting. So says as follows. We are, remember, Reish Samach Aleph that we just finished was about Tosefa Shabbos and bringing in Shabbos early. So now we have some final halachas about Shabbos preparation. Sif Aleph. Yisader Shulchano V'yatziya Hamitos. Table should be set. The bed should be made. V'yisakein kolon yane habayis kedei sheyimtza enu aruch u'mesudar bevo mibeis ha-knesses. The house should be all set in order so that when you get home from shul, everything's already ready. We pointed out that when the king comes over to your house, when he walks in, you don't say, oh, hold on a second, wait, and then start cleaning the living room. You clean the house before the king gets there. So I will point out that it says yisader in the masculine. Sometimes we think, okay, so this is really for my wife. She should get the whole house ready. So that way when I get home from shul, everything is set. It doesn't say it. It says yisader shulchana. You should set the table. You should, I'm a big talker. I can't necessarily claim that I'm always the one setting the table or making the beds or getting all in Yanei Abayis set up. But those things should all be set and arranged that when you come in, the house is set. This is actually a Gemara. It's a famous Gemara. It's the Gemara about Shalom Aleichem, about singing Shalom Aleichem and about the Malachi Asharis. If you have the source sheet, I don't know how many people have the source sheet, but people have the source sheet, people don't have the source sheet? Yes, yes. Okay, good. All right, so I'll read from the Gemara. The Mishnah Bura in Gimel here, in Sifkat and Gimel, the Mishnah Bura summarizes it, but it's really a Gemara in Shabbos Kuf Yotes. The Gemara says like this, Tanya Rabbi Yossi, this is the first source on the Reish Samach Beis sheet. Tanya Rabbi Yossi bar Yehuda Omer, Shnei Malachi Asharis Melavin Lo Le'odem Be'er Shabbos Mibes HaKnesses, Lebeso. Two angels escort a person. It's interesting that it says on Erev Shabbos, because Choritz already Shabbos, unless they were making early Shabbos, and they're calling it Erev Shabbos for that reason. Two Malachi Asharis escort a person home Friday night from the Beis Knesses to his house. Echad Tov V'Echad Ra. One is the good angel and one's the bad angel. U'Kishabo L'Beiso, when they come into the house, U'Matso Ner Doluk, and they find a candle lit. The Shulchan Aruch, and the table set. U'Mitaso Mutzas, and the beds are made. So the Malach Tov says, Yihi Ratzon Shtei L'Shabbos Acheres. It should be like this next Shabbos. My bracha to you is your house should always be so set and beautiful when you get home for Shabbos. Umalach ra ona amen bal karcho. And the evil angel is forced against his will to say amen. V'im lav, and if this is not the case, so the malach ra omer yihi ratzon shtei l'shabbos acheres kach. So the malach ra says the same thing. If he finds it that it's a mess, so then the Malach Ra gets to speak and make the bracha. And his bracha is, it should be as messy next week as it is this week. And the Malach Tov is, Ona Amen Bal Karcho. So these are the angels that we refer to. Again, whatever this means. These are the angels that we refer to when we say Shalom Aleichem, when we sing Shalom Aleichem. Because we're escorting those angels back to our house. That's what we're told here. This is a very interesting thing that I don't see so many people being noeg this way, but maybe there's someone here who has this minog to go out of the way for this. This is in Sif Katan Dalit in the Mishnah Berurah. He says as follows: Yesh noagin liyoshtei mapos ala shulchan. Some people have a minog that they have two tablecloths, one on top of the other. Why? Mishum kishminarin hamapa nimsas ashulchan megula. You don't ever want the table to be bare because it's Shabbos. You don't want the table to be bare. So therefore, what do? You have two tablecloths. That way, when you're taking off the first tablecloth and you're shaking it out, there's still a tablecloth on the table.
So plastic cover.
Right, so we have plastic covers now. That's right, right? We all have that, I guess, now, because we all have a tablecloth and plastic cover. But I imagine that's because we just don't want to get the tablecloth dirty. Even though we could throw away the plastic, it's easy to just wrap up the plastic and throw it away, as opposed to, I see my grandfather's logged on, I remember eating at his house on Shabbos, and after the meal, he used to take out these two metal, they look like sheets of metal, but they were nice. They were made out of silver, and it would be used to scrape the table, to scrape all the crumbs off the table and collect all the crumbs. So we're all spoiled. We don't have to do that anymore. We just put on the plastic, wrap up the plastic and throw it away. So, but this is, the idea here is the point. The point is that the table should be set. It should be nice. Ad kedei kach, that a person should even try not to have the table exposed at all the whole Shabbos. Because it's Shabbos in the house, things should look nice. Okay, moving on to Sif Beis. Yishtadel shielo begodim noyim l'Shabbos. A person should have nice clothing for Shabbos. Vim yefsho, if you can't, so l'fachos yishal shel begodim l'mat derech kavod. So I don't know, flip them over, pull them down, let them extend. Try to make your clothing, try to reorganize them in order so that they could be na'eh for Shabbos. So this is the... this is a kiyum of the din of kavod. The Gemara says, "Shelo yeh malbushcha shel Shabbos ke malbushcha shel chol." You shouldn't have your clothing of chol be your Shabbos clothing. And the Mishnah Berurah makes a reference to this. Tichsiv v'chibadeto. This is in Sif Katan Hay. Take a look at the Mishnah Berurah. Tichsiv v'chibadeto. V'darshu Chazal. Shelo yeh malbushcha shel Shabbos ke malbushcha shel chol. Now, it's interesting. What's the word that the Shulchan Aruch uses here? He says, begodim na'im. Now, begodim na'im, does that mean new clothing, special clothing for Shabbos? Or does that just mean freshly laundered? Your clothing should be nice. Is begodim na'im referring to specific clothing? Or does begodim na'im mean that your shirt shouldn't be wrinkled, your pants should be clean? So, in the poskim, they distinguish between clothing that one wears for stature and respect, as opposed to clothing that people wear, which is more functional. So what do I mean by that? So clothing that a person wears for respect, so for instance, a suit. If you want to get all dressed up, so you put on a nice suit. Functionally, you just need a pair of pants and a garment on top. You don't need a suit, matching and a style. But a suit is something that we wear for respect. It's something that we wear... give stature. You're going to a nice event, so you put on a suit. So that anything that a person wears for respect, you should have a special one for Shabbos. And therefore suits, for instance, if you wear suits all week for work, so you should have unique suits that or a unique suit that you wear for Shabbos, because it's something that comes from respect. It's interesting, the poskim I saw in the Chod HaShani in Rav Nissim Karelitz from Bnei Brak. He was just nifter this past year. So he writes, and this has to be a cultural thing, he writes that shoes, you don't need special shoes for Shabbos because shoes are not for stature and for kavod. Shoes are just functional because you need to walk. And he says, anyway, they get dirty all the time. You know, the nature of them is you're walking on the ground. They get dirty and muddy. So I don't know. I think nowadays, you know, you go out and you get yourself, you know, your Ferragamo shoes or your whatever. You go out and you get yourself your fancy shoes and you pick the color. I would think that that's something that a person wears for respect. Something wears it for stature. You know, you don't just, I guess maybe, you know, in the olden days, they would just tromp around in, you know, galoshes. It would be muddy and the streets weren't paved and the sidewalks weren't paved. So people got dirty. Nowadays, everything's paved. You know, no one expects their shoes to get dirty. You know, obviously the shoes are not clean, but, you know, you polish your shoes. So I would think that that would mean that you would need unique shoes for Shabbos. I think that's the minhag. People have Shabbos shoes. The Mishnah Berurah in Hay does quote where we picked up from, sorry, the last line in Sif Katan Hay in the Mishnah Berurah, V'im efsher lo tov shelo gam talis acher l'Shabbos. Brings here a minhag to have a separate talis for Shabbos. Also, I would imagine it's a talus, even though it's something that we use for a mitzvah. But since it's something that you wear on the outside, so maybe it's something that's more perceptible. So he brings down a minhag to have a separate talus for Shabbos. So leaving talus on the side, certainly shoes and suits are something that a person wears, or a hat. If a person wears a hat, so yeah, but we put on a hat for a fancy affair. So that's something that you're wearing for stature, something you're wearing for respect. So there should be something unique for Shabbos. But functional clothing, like undergarments, so those, they should be clean, but you don't need, the post comes, you don't need special, you know, special underwear for Shabbos. You know, you don't, you know, like Shabbos covered, you know, written on the waistband. You don't need that. You can wear your regular undergarments, and but they should be clean. They should be, you know, something that you're doing out of respect for Shabbos. Now, it's interesting. We keep using this word kavod. You'll remember that in one of our first shiurim, we quoted that the Gra says that there's a chiluk between kavod and oneg. Kavod are things, if you remember, that one does before Shabbos. And oneg are things that a person does on Shabbos. But here we're talking about wearing Shabbos clothes on Shabbos, kavod Shabbos. So I think we already spoke out this idea, but just to say it one more time, just to sharpen it, I don't think the Gra was saying that there's no inyan of kavod on Shabbos. What he meant was that the things that you do before Shabbos, for Shabbos, things you do before on account of Shabbos, don't think that those are just a hechsher mitzvah. I cook before Shabbos, I light candles, I set up the house before Shabbos, that's just a hechsher mitzvah. No, that itself is a mitzvah of kavod Shabbos. But obviously there's also a concept of kavod Shabbos on Shabbos. To wear Shabbos clothing on Shabbos is kavod Shabbos. It's not oneg necessarily. It might be more enjoyable to wear shorts and a t-shirt. But we wear Shabbos clothes on Shabbos because it gives kavod to Shabbos. Now, here also, if we're making this chiluk between clothing that we wear for respect as opposed to functional clothing, in the Chut Shani, it's in your source sheet here, Rav Nissim Karelitz here, he writes that weather-related clothing, coats, scarves, those are things that are functional, and they're not signs of stature and respect. Therefore, you don't need a unique one for Shabbos. So you don't necessarily need a unique coat or a unique scarf for Shabbos. So again, I think this might be a cultural thing. It could be that in Bnei Brak, they don't wear outer jackets and scarves for stature and for kavod. You wear it to stay warm. That's probably the real reason we're supposed to be wearing coats, to stay warm. But I think in a lot of our communities, we wear, you know, people have, you know, they're going out and they look at their coats, like, which coat should I put on for this outing? People have sometimes more than one coat, and sometimes people have more than one scarf, and you buy yourself a nice scarf with a nice style because you like how it looks. So again, it could be in the room here, even in our virtual room, there might be different practices. Some people might wear coats, have one coat, and that's their one coat that they wear all the time. And they don't wear coats for stature, for respect, or for style. And other people differently. So I think that also might be dependent on people's minhagim. Someone asked about the talis katan. So I was referring, the Shulchan Aruch is referring to a talis gadol. I have seen people have special talis katan for Shabbos. Sometimes people will get a tzitzis that say l'chavot Shabbos kodesh, like embroidered on them or something like that, which is very nice. And that actually is a great segue for what I'm going to mention right now. And that's the Mishnah Berurah. I skipped one line in the middle of Hay. So if you look back in the Shulchan Aruch and the Mishnah Berurah, Sif Kut and Hay, I hope everyone's with me with the Shulchan Aruch and Mishnah Berurah. So if you look at Hay, so he writes, V'tov shelo yulbash b'Shabbos. It's good not to wear on Shabbos. Mikol ma shelovash b'chol. From any clothing that you wore during the week. Afilu chaluk. Even your chaluk. Now chaluk is an undergarment. So he says here, Tov. He doesn't say Yerchayev, he says Tov. If you look on the bottom in the Shaar HaTzion, who he's quoting from the Arizal. The Arizal felt that a person should wear brand new clothing, all his clothing, even undergarments, should be changed for Shabbos. Now, it happens to be for a lot of us, I think that's the practice anyway. We take a shower and, you know, we change our undergarments every day. I think that might not have been the case back then. I'm not so sure they changed their undergarments every day. So the Arizal here brings down to have clothing on Shabbos that you don't wear during the week. It might even mean to have special clothing, even undergarments for Shabbos, a special chumrah of the Arizal here. And again, you have to, it's not clear exactly if he means just not to wear on Shabbos the undergarments you wore during the week, meaning to make sure you change your undergarments as well for Shabbos, or if he means to literally have unique clothing. If you look at the Makoro sheet in source 2, through the Maisa Rav, which is a sefer of practices of the Vilna Gaon. So it writes here, Minhogo lahachlif kol begadov mikaf regel viad rosh. He used to change all of his clothing from his feet up to his head. So again, I don't think that that necessarily means you have to have unique clothing for Shabbos, but it means that everything you put on should be brand new, fresh for Shabbos, fresh in the sense of freshly laundered. Okay, let's move on to Sifkat Gimel. So Yilbash Begadav Hanoim, these nice clothing that you wear, you should wear them V'yismach B'biya Shabbos and be happy when Shabbos arrives. Ki yotzi likras ha-melech, like as if you're coming to welcome a king. Uki yotzi likras chasen v'kala, if you're going out to greet a chasen v'kala. As we find that Rabbi Chanina, one of the Amoraim, early Amoraim, Rabbi Chanina would be ma'atef v'koi v'panya d'mali shabso. He used to wrap himself, meaning put on nice clothing, and he would stand before Shabbos and say, Bo neitze likra Shabbos machasa, come, let us go out to greet the Shabbos queen. And Rav Yanai, who also, these were all the chaverim of Rav Yudah Anasi, Rav Chanina Bar Chama, Rav Yanai. So Rav Yanai used to say, Bo ichala, bo ichala. You know, come, queen, come. So from the Mishnah, from the Shulchan Aruch here, it's mashma that you're supposed to be wearing your clothing before Shabbos begins. You're not supposed to say, oh, Shabbos is here, let me get dressed. Again, these are our practices. I think we all do this. We get into our Shabbos clothing before Shabbos comes. And the Ramah adds, the Yilbash Atzmo Bigdei Shabbos Miyad Achrei Shir Irachatz. You should put on your Shabbos clothing immediately after you shower. And sometimes a person might shower at 1 o'clock in the afternoon. And then he puts on his like shorts and his t-shirt. He hangs around the house. And then 4 o'clock, 5 o'clock, he puts on his Shabbos clothing. So Ramah at least says that he thinks that it's a greater expression of kavod if you shower and then get right into your Shabbos clothing right away. So this is in terms of starting Shabbos early. Excuse me, in terms of wearing clothing at the onset of Shabbos. How about at the end of Shabbos? How long should a person wear their Shabbos clothing after Shabbos? You should put your Shabbos clothing on before Shabbos begins, so you can greet Shabbos. What about when Shabbos ends? So here there's an interesting practice of the Chazon Ish and the Stipler that's brought down in a fascinating work called Orchos Rabbeinu, which is a collection of Hanhagos, so of the Stipler. So it says there, so we're going to get there 1 second, Ariel, excellent. So it's brought down there that the Stipler and the Chazon Ish used to take their Shabbos clothing off immediately after Havdalah. The second Havdalah was over, they would go upstairs and change out of their Shabbos clothing. Why would they do that? Because they didn't want to be wearing their Shabbos clothing during the week. We said that your Shabbos clothing, your weekday clothing, is supposed to be different clothing. So they used to change immediately afterwards. This is the Arizal. The Arizal said, your Shabbos clothing should be completely fresh for Shabbos, completely new for Shabbos. So they used to take their Shabbos clothing off right after Havdalah. The Kaf HaChaim brings down that you shouldn't do that. You should wait until after Malav HaMalka, because you're going to have a Malav HaMalka after Shabbos. You should keep your Shabbos clothing on until after Malav HaMalka. So this is the Kaf HaChaim, this is the Stipler, right? Ariel made reference to after Malav HaMalka. If you take a look in the Mishnah Brura, Mishnah Brura himself, so here he just writes, if you look in Ches, in Sifkat and Ches, V'yelech bohem ad motzi Shabbos achar Avdala. So he brings down like the Stipler. You wear them until after Havdalah. But if you look at the Dirshu Mishnah Brura quotes, that this doesn't necessarily mean that you have to take them off after Havdalah. He means that you should make sure you wear them until Havdalah. That's the question, until Havdalah. But you don't have to take them off at that point. And sure enough, the quotes here from the Leket Yosher. The Leket Yosher was a Talmud of the Trumas Hadeshen. We've already mentioned the Trumas Hadeshen. Trumas Hadeshen was the one with the tshuva in Austria, how they used to bring Shabbos in so early. So there's a sefer called Leket Yosher, which is also a collection written by a Talmud. He writes the Hanhagos of his Rebbe. So as opposed to it being about the Stipler, who just lived 30 years ago, it's about the Trumas Hadeshen, who lived in the 1200s. So it's a fascinating work. You can get a real personal sense of who the Tret Mesadeshan was. It brings down lots of his minhagim. So it says there that he used to wear his Shabbos clothing until he would go to sleep. He didn't feel a need to take them off any earlier than that. And in the Chutshani of Karelitz, of Nissim, he also writes that he thinks there's no chiv to take them off early. It's true that Stipler did, but that was a midas chasidus. It wasn't necessary. I see someone here wrote in, Baruch Yosef wrote in, that what about, or the nafkamina for Shabbos Chazon? When you're talking about Shabbos Chazon, when it goes into Tisha B'Av, or you mean Shabbos Chazon in general? Is your microphone working this week?
Not necessarily. Also in general, because people don't wear fancy clothes during the 9 days.
You mean to take it off for the 9 days, to not be wearing fancy clothing for the 9 days itself, you're saying? I'm not sure if you heard me there, but okay, I think I hear where you're coming from. Okay, this one last point is, there's an interesting discussion about wearing your Shabbos clothes for a wedding. In that Sefer Orchos Rabbeinu, it's also quoted here in the Dirshu, he says that the stipler wouldn't wear his Shabbos jacket, or whatever, his Shabbos frock, whatever he used to wear, he didn't wear it to weddings. Because he said Shabbos clothing is supposed to be Shabbos clothing. So he didn't want to wear it to a wedding. But again, in the Chutshani, he argues that he thought that was maybe a chumrah, that he doesn't think you have to hold that way. And he even brings a raya, how the Verhetiv brings down that it's in your source sheet there. Now, a person has clothing that they bought for a wedding before Yontiv, they don't have to wear it on Yontiv. They're allowed to save it for the wedding. And he says Yontiv clothing are supposed to be nicer than Shabbos clothing. So you see that there's an inyan that a wedding could be on the same level, if not greater than Shabbos or Yontiv. So I think a lot of people's minhag. Again, the Arizal is the one who people like to talk about, that the Arizal holds Shabbos clothing or Shabbos clothing. You only wear them for Shabbos. Everything you wear on Shabbos has to be unique for Shabbos, or at least fresh for Shabbos. And you shouldn't be wearing your Shabbos clothing during the week. But in general, I think that for a Suda Shal Mitzvah, Simcha Shal Mitzvah, so people generally do wear their Shabbos clothing. Okay, the last thing we need to talk about in this Siman, then we'll be able to really get started on the next Siman, is this last Sif that we just quoted is the source for Kabbalah Shabbos. As I'm sure many of you are aware, this whole idea of Kabbalah Shabbos, when I say Kabbalah Shabbos, now I mean the davening of Kabbalah Shabbos. When we go to shul after Mincha and we say Kabbalah Shabbos until Maariv, so the Kabbalah Shabbos is not an old minhag at all, you know, relative in the Jewish history sense. It really began in Tzfat with the Ramak and the Arizal. That's really where this whole practice of saying these specific Mizmori Tehillim, as I'm sure many of you are aware, even the Tefillah of Lechadodi was written relatively early. The reason I say relatively early is because most of our Tefillos were either written by David HaMelech or written by Anshei Knesset HaGedolah. And Lechadodi was written by Shlomo Alkabetz in Tzfat in the 1500s. So we're, you know, right after, I'm sure some of you at least know, the Jews, the reason why Tzfat exploded as a community, at least Al-Pi Derech HaTeva, the reason why it happened, was because there was the Spanish Inquisition, and the Jews were all kicked out of Spain and needed a new place to live. So they all started running out of Christian Spain, and they found a place to live in the Ottoman, in the area of the Ottoman Empire and in Turkey. And going from Turkey, when you get to Eretz Yisrael, the first place that you reach is Northern Israel. So they went to Tzfat. Tzfat exploded at that time, and it was a major source of Kabbalah. The Beis Yosef lived there, the author of the Shulchan Aruch, and during this time period, and the Arizal. So they instituted this idea of Kabbalah Shabbos. They used to go out and welcome the Shabbos by saying these Mizmori Tehillim and Lechadodi. So I just want to speak very quickly, because the Mishnah Berurah makes a reference to it here. If you take a look in Sif Katan Yud, so take a look in Sif Katan Yud in the Mishnah Berurah. B'miksas mikomos noagim lotzeis mi beis haknesses la'azara. They have a minog to go out of the beis knesses into the foyer, into the courtyard, and they say bo v'netze. Okay, so I think a lot of us don't have that minog. We don't do that. The Anu Noagin, says the Mishnah Berurah, we're Noag, Shemahapchin Pneim Litzad Marav. We turn, we don't go out, but we turn around to the west, right? The shuls are facing east to Israel. We turn around to the west when we say Bowie Vishalom, when we say the last stanza of Bowie Vishalom. Vinoagim Lamod Oz, and the Minog is to stand like that. The Lasos Dugma, and then to move your body in a way is if you're being Mekabel an Adam Gadol. This is the reason why we turn around and we bow and we sort of turn while we're bowing, because we're trying to show with our bodies as if we're bringing someone into the room. And that's one thing we should have in mind when we're doing it, is that we're not just, you know, stomp bowing down. The idea is that we're ushering somebody into the room. Now, there's just a couple of details I'd like to clarify here about this practice. Number one is the direction to turn. Number one is direction to turn. So the Mishnah Berurah, not here, in Tav Kuf, Nun Beis, where he's discussing taking the Lulav, and when you do the Nanuim, which way to turn. So he writes there something that you might have heard of. We talk about it regarding the Mizbeach as well, that whenever a person has an opportunity to turn right or to turn left, he should go right. That's where he should always go right. So therefore, when a person's turning backwards, so he turns to the right. That's the direction you're supposed to turn when you're turning around backwards. That's one point. The other point, and I see Ariel asked a question here. Ariel Ephraim asked the question here that why west? You know, he writes here that they used to turn to the west. So there is a little bit of a debate, actually, which direction you should be turning. Rav Moshe writes, like it says here in the Mishnah Berurah, Rav Moshe Feinstein writes, like it says here in the Mishnah Berurah, that you're always supposed to turn to the west. Why the west? So first he quotes from the Arizal, the Kaf Chaim quotes from the Arizal, that the sun sets in the west, and we are eagerly awaiting the sun to go down, because that's when Shabbos comes in. And we're excited for Shabbos. We're looking forward to Shabbos. So we turn towards the west, the direction where the sun is going down. Number two, the Gemara in Bava Basra says that the Shekhinah is in the west. Now, whatever that means, Shekhinah is everywhere. But the Shekhinah is more pronounced in the west. Now, whatever that means, but Rav Moshe quotes that as well, and therefore says that the issue here is the west. The reason why that's not 100% clear is because the shuls were facing the east. So to turn to the back door, because there is a structure the way a shul is supposed to be, and the entrance, the sanctuary is supposed to be in the back of the shul. So memela, that means that you're facing the west. But it's quoted here in the Dirshu as well, the Chut Shani, Rav Nissim. So he writes that the Mishnah Berurah only wrote that because he was in Europe. And in Europe, they faced east. So to turn around to the back of the shul was to turn around to the west. But that's not really the point. The real point is to turn to the door because you're ushering in Shabbos. So you're supposed to turn to the door of the shul. That's the idea. We're supposed to be showing that we're eagerly excited for Shabbos to be coming in. So you turn to the entrance of the door. And therefore, there's obviously some very important nafkamina. For instance, if you live in Tzfat and you live north of Yerushalayim, which means that your shul is facing south, which means that your entrance to your shul is in the north. So do you, right, you're facing south, davening down towards Yerushalayim, do you turn around to the north or do you turn to the west? If you live anywhere in the eastern, in the far east, if you live in China, I mean, I guess there also, you could theoretically face, you know, the world is a circle, so you could, I guess, face the other direction. But certainly if you live in Jordan or if you live in Saudi Arabia, I mean, you have other issues, but in terms of the shul, you'll be facing the other direction. Or if you live in Eilat, you're going to be facing north. So this is a little bit of a discussion. Rav Moshe speaks about shuls that where the sanctuary is already facing west, and he says that you have to do something with your body to sort of show that you're greeting because you're already facing west. And remember, Rav Moshe holds you should always turn to the west, and you're already facing west. So he says you should do something with your body to indicate that you're welcoming Shabbos. I don't know exactly what that is. You know, not sure exactly how you do that, but that's what he writes. Okay, I have noticed in shuls, and I have not yet found a reason for it. So maybe if anyone here is aware of one, I would love to hear. the Pashtus is that when you get up to the end of the stanza and you say Boikala, Boikala, that's when you're supposed to start turning back, bowed down, greeting and ushering the Kala in. I have noticed in some shuls, and I've noticed it in a few Sephardic shuls, maybe it's a Sephardic practice, that they stay facing the back until they're finished not only with the stanza, but also saying L'chadodi again, basically till the end of L'chadodi is over. So I looked, I didn't find a source for that. If that is anyone's practice and knows why they do that, so I'd be interested. Again, I think most of us, the practice is that when you get to Boikala at the end of the stanza, then that's when you bow and turn, everyone turns around, and then you bow and turn back. But some people wait longer. Yes, Avi Klings is pointing out, yes, that is correct, that when we davened with Shalavim and we davened in Breslov in Tzvat, so there they turned to Meron, they turned towards Meron. Hold on, let's just get the map in our head here. Meron is west of Tzvat, northwest of Tzvat, I think, right? Am I correct? It's definitely west of Tzvat. So Avi is saying that there, he remembers that in the shul, they actually turned towards Meron. Moshe, you're saying that in Tzvat you're talking about, Moshe?
In Tzvat, you dive into the south and then you turn right to the west by L'chadodi.
Oh, you turn to the west. Which
is towards Meron.
Which is towards Meron. Yeah. Okay. Which is also what Rav Moshe says to do. He says to turn to the west. So you're fulfilling all the different opinions here. Yaakov is saying that his shul in London stands and face back for the whole from Mizmor LeDavid until after Mizmor Shir. They face backwards the entire L'chadodi, they face backwards. Is that what you're saying? Wow, that I've never seen. The entire L'chadodi, the shul is standing facing backwards. Is it all Sephardim do that? I see that Baruch Yosef wrote in that's a Sephardic practice. I've seen Sephardim, again, turn around for the last stanza and stay facing till the end. But I haven't seen, you've seen that even before L'chadodi starts, they're already facing backwards? Baruch Yosef? Wow, okay, that I haven't seen. I've davened in a lot of Sephardic places. I've never seen that. Okay, very interesting. All right, we'll see if there's... I mean, we understand where it's coming from. Right. But okay, very interesting. Okay, let's get started just for a few minutes on Reish Samach Gimel. Let's just begin the discussion. And Reish Samach Gimel is about Hadlakas Neiros. And we're going to be talking about the source for Hadlakas Neiros and try to understand, obviously, what the basic idea of Hadlakas Neiros is. And then we're going to get to, hopefully in the coming weeks, some of the shilas that come up all the time. You know, you're eating by your in-laws Friday night meal. So do you light there, or eating at anyone's house, the Friday night meal? Do you light there? Do you light in your own house? Electric lights, can you use electric lights? So are there a difference between incandescent light bulbs and fluorescent light bulbs for these halachos? So we'll see. These are very fascinating machloksim. So let's just get some of the basics down about Hadlakas Neiros. So there's a Gemara in Shabbos. I'll give you the source sheet here. The Gemara Shabbos on Chaf Hey Amud Beis says, Hadlakas Ner b'Shabbos Chova. It is an obligation. And the Rambam writes that it is a takana midivrei sofer. It's not a mitzvah. It's certainly not a mitzvah d'oraisa. I don't even know if we would call it a mitzvah d'rabbana. It's a takana. I mean, I would call it a mitzvah d'rabbana, a takana of a mitzvah d'rabbana by the midivrei sofer, the Rambam writes. So which again, divrei sofrim is a loaded term in the Rambam, but we'll assume for now that it's a mitzvah derabbanan at best. The idea of Hadlakas Neiros on Shabbos. If you take a look in the Shulchan Aruch Reish Samach Gimel, we're going to skip to Sif Beis for a second. He writes Echad Hanoshim, the Echad Noshim Chayavim Lios B'Dotayim Ner Dolok B'Shabbos. So first of all, the way that he formulates it is very interesting. He says, men and women have a chiyuv, which is just important to point out. Sometimes people think, oh, this is a woman's mitzvah. Now, we're going to see it is a woman's mitzvah, but it doesn't mean that a man's not chayiv. A man is certainly chayiv. It's just the woman often does it for him. But a man is certainly chayiv in the mitzvah of Hadlakas Neiros. And if a person finds himself, you know, first of all, someone's single and they're living on their own, they have to light Shabbos candles. And sometimes it might even be if a person's in a different time zone, we'll talk about that. If a person's in a different time zone and Shabbos for them is starting a different time than their spouse, they're in a conference, so you're going to have to light Shabbos candles, we'll see. So Echad HaNoshim V'Echad Noshim are Chayavim Lios B'Bateim Ner Dolch B'Shabbos. It's interesting. It doesn't say there's a mitzvah to light the candles. It's a mitzvah to have candles lit. It's not the act of lighting that's the mitzvah, it sounds like, but it's the reality. It's being in a situation where you have candles that are lit. Okay, so we see here the Chiyav is for men and for women, but as he says in Gimel, V'HaNoshim Musharos Bo Yoser, so even though it's a mitzvah on everyone, but the general, the women do it because the women are the ones who are in control. They're the ones who are setting up Shabbos, getting ready for Shabbos. Therefore, they're the natural ones to do this mitzvah. In Shulchan Aruch Beis, in Sif Beis here, he says at the end, afilu ein lo mayocha, even if you don't have what to eat, shoel al apsachim v'lokeach shemen u'belad l'kasaner, shezeh b'chlal oneg Shabbosu. So he writes that even if a person is poor and doesn't have food, doesn't have money for food, he has to make sure that he gets enough money, borrows money, he begs for money in order to be able to light Hanukkah candles, Shabbos candles. Now, in Sif Katan Tes, in the Mishnah Berurah, he says that you need to take what the Shulchan Aruch just said with a grain of salt. When the Shulchan Aruch here says, even if you don't have any food, you should borrow money for Shabbos candles, you might think that that means that your first priority is Shabbos candles. And the Mishnah Berurah says that's not true. Your first priority is challah. And the reason why challah comes first is because you're mekayim mitzvah of kiddush. You're mekayim the mitzvah of suda with it. If you don't have money for wine, you can make kiddush on challah. So challah is for sure the first thing you should be spending your money on. It's your food, it's your suda, you're going to end up making kiddush on it. But after, so when he says you don't have food, he means you don't have extra food besides the bare necessity of having challah. So once you have challah, so then the next thing is to make sure that you have Shabbos candles. Now, and also in the Be'er Halacha, he says that even when we say challah, we mean enough challah to satiate yourself. We don't mean, you know, one kezayis in order so that I can make hamotzi, and then we move on to Shabbos candles. It means enough bread to be able to have a suda, and then you move on to a Shabbos candles. And certainly, it's just an interesting hashkafic point here. He's saying it lahalacha, but it's an interesting hashkafic point as well. When you are borrowing money to light Shabbos candles, so you do the bare minimum. You don't, on other people's tab, you don't do it l'chumra. He says, therefore, you light one candle. We're going to see that. And generally, we try to light more than one candle. But he says that if you're borrowing money, so it's enough to borrow one for one candle. Now, if you go back to the beginning of Reish Samach Gimel, so we're told, Yehi Zahir, up on top in the Shulchan Aruch, Yehi Zahir Lasos Ner Yofeh, should make sure that you have a nice candle. And in the Mishnah Berurah, he says that this is because of Hidr Mitzvah, that once you're lighting candles, that's the Chiyuv, but we try to have ourselves nice candles. So that's why people go out and get themselves nice candlesticks. The truth is, even ner, we're going to see, the word ner probably doesn't mean the flame or the candle even. Ner in general in Chazal means the vessel that holds the oil and the wick. So it's a good chance what he means here, he has zayir lasos ner yafe, it means to have a nice candlestick. And that's why it's a minhag that people have nice candlesticks for Shabbos. That's a hiddur mitzvah for this very important mitzvah of candles. Okay, just very quickly, this I think it's well-known things, but I want to just finish this section. We'll just take a few more minutes. There are three independent reasons for lighting Shabbos candles. Only two of them appear in the Shulchan Aruch, but there are three that we find in the Rishonim. The first one is Oneg Shabbos. It was already quoted in the Shulchan Aruch. If you look back at Beis, he writes that if you're poor, you should make sure that you have still candles. Shezeh b'chlal oneg Shabbos. And the source for this is source number 4 in your source sheet. It's a Medrash Tanchuma. V'karosa l'Shabbos oneg. That's the pasuk in Yeshaya. And Chazal Darshan. Zu hadlakas haner b'Shabbos. which might be where the Rambam gets the Divrei Sofrim from, could be. Learned out from a pasuk in Nach. That would often more commonly be Divrei Kabbalah. So we won't get into that right now. But Oneg Shabbos, and the Rambam quotes this, as we said, the Shulchan Aruch himself quotes it, and the Mishneh Berurah, if you take a look, this is critical. The Mishneh Berurah in Sifkat Na'alif says that this is the Iker reason for Hadlakas Neiros. Hine, this is the very beginning of Reish Samach Gimel, Sifkat Na'alif. Hine Iker Hadlakas Haner Hu Chova Mishum Mitzvahs Oneg Shabbos. So the primary reason is because of Oneg Shabbos. It's interesting, it might trigger certain nafkamina, as we'll see in a minute. Kavod Shabbos is the second reason. Second reason is Kavod Shabbos. This is a Rashi on a Gemara in Shabbos. The Gemara in Shabbos that said that Hadlakas Ner is a Chova. This is source 3. So if you look at Rashi, Rashi says, Kavod Shabbos hu, she'ein su d'chashuva el b'makom or. Nobody has a nice meal in a dark room, right? You know, a lot of times, you know, you want to make a nice, fancy dinner. What do? You put out candles. Now, people put out candles nowadays at a fancy dinner, even when there's plenty of light in the room. Those candles are not to give light. The candles are there to give kavod, to give respect and honor to the meal. So people light candles nowadays to give honor, even if they don't need it for the light. And that's what Rashi says. This is part of Kavod Shabbos. It makes the meal and the setting of the meal more mechubad. This is not quoted in Shulchan Aruch Kavod Shabbos. Shulchan Aruch had said Oneg Shabbos. Kavod Shabbos is quoted by Rashi. Does not appear, to the best of my knowledge, in Shulchan Aruch. The third reason is Shalom Bayis. This is the famous reason that many of us are familiar with. This is the Gemara source number 2 on your source sheet. Rava says, if you only have enough money for Kiddush or Kiddush wine or Neiros, you buy the Neiros. Why? Because Shalom Bayis. Because of the issue of Shalom Bayis. And Rashi explains that if you don't have light, so then people bump into things, they trip over things, they start to get into arguments. When there's light and people are able to see.
Would that apply also nowadays?
Where we have electric lights.
Yeah.
So, okay.
If you had the option to buy Kiddush or Neiros, you still have to.
Good. So we're going to talk about, the answer is probably not. You should probably buy Kiddush. Because we're going to talk about, the truth is it's going to even be a much tougher question than you're asking. Maybe you can't make a bracha on your Shabbos candles because you already have light from your electric lights.
Yeah. So
you're not doing anything when you light your Shabbos candles. So if the Iker is because of Oneg, so even Oneg, what does Oneg mean? Oneg means to have light in the room. If it was because of Kavod, this is what I was referring to before. If the Iker reason was Kavod, then nowadays for sure you still light the candles because it's Kavodic to have candles on your table. But if it's really for Oneg, what does Oneg mean? Oneg means people enjoy having a lit up room. You don't enjoy candles. You don't sit there and say, oh, wow, it's so fun that there are candles in the room. But it's an enjoyable experience when there's light in the room. So there's already light because of the electric lights. So we're going to see. We'll see. We're going to talk about that. Just to finish up. So as we said, that this is precedent over Kiddush wine is because of Shalom Bayis. And the last thing so those are the three reasons for candles. Oneg Shabbos, Kavod Shabbos, and Shalom Bayis. Only Oneg and Shalom Bayis are mentioned in the Shulchan Aruch. That's in Gimel. If you look at Gimel, so he says towards the middle, Im ein yodo maseges liknos ner l'Shabbos v'ner l'Chanukah. If you don't have enough money to buy for Shabbos and Chanukah, so ner Shabbos is first because of Shalom Bayis. The ein Shalom b'Bayis below ner. And then in the Ramah, he quotes how it takes precedence over wine as well. Okay, the last, very last thing, and we'll end with this. Besides these three reasons, the Gemara in Shabbos on Chaf Gimel, source number 1, also adds what we'll call a skula for lighting Shabbos candles. And it says here, Amar Rav Huna, Harogel B'ner, Havyin Le Bonim Tamidei Chachamim. That if a person is careful to light Shabbos candles, so it will be a schus that his children will be Tamidei Chachamim. So we'll have to talk about that a little bit more. Where does that come from? And what's the deeper idea behind that? But that was our introduction to Hadlakas Neiros, Mirtz Hashem. Next week, we're going to speak about how many candles. We're going to see there's lots of options about how many candles. going to talk about the special kanas if a person forgets to light Shabbos candles. And then we'll start talking immediately after that. We'll start discussing electricity and what we do about electricity nowadays. Can you be yotze with electricity? Does the fact that there's electricity ruin the mitzvah now? We don't even have a mitzvah because of the electricity. So we'll talk about all of that in Mitzvah Hashem next week.